mention also that I want to dedicate this year for Rafua Shlema, for Simcha Ben Bela. To recap where we left off yesterday, so we had essentially left it with Akasha. The Akasha is dependent on certain premises. One can argue on some of the premises, but one way or another, it creates a setup for understanding certain points. And as posed by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the thrust of the Kasha is that there's basically a stira, as he understands it, between the Gemara in the beginning of Bava Metzia and our Gemara in Bava Kamma. And so much so that our Gemara is the reason the Rambam decides the way he does against the implication of that Gemara in Bava Metzia. That essentially the Gemara in Bava Metzia, which had talked about one of the instances of a motzimei chaver lo haraya, that if somebody has a behema that is a safek bukhar, so we let that person keep the behema because of a motzimei chaver lo haraya. So does that mean that it should be asur begiza v'avoda? You shouldn't be allowed to work with it? And what does that mean about the idea that he can count that animal towards figuring out Maisa Behema? So the Gemara, got a chance to see this morning, so the Gemara goes back and forth about that, but at one point suggesting that if you say Tokfu Kohen Ein Motzin Miyado, the same way we say Motzin Michal Varaya for the Yisrael, if the Kohen were to get his hands on it, we would also leave it with him, Motzin Michal Varaya. And the Gemara says, but that's a contradiction to allowing him to use it for Meiser and the like, because apparently it suggests that really it is somewhat the property of the Kohen, and we're just leaving it with the Yisrael because of Hamotzim Echaber Al-Varai. So that the Gemara goes back and forth on a little bit, but ultimately it sounds like, yeah, that's a strong question, and we have to assume that if we say Hamotzim Echaberai, that if it means that he can keep it and use it for Meiser and those purposes, so then we would not say that a Kohen who holds on to it can also keep it, but rather we would give it back to the Yisrael. So B'chanan says, what's going on in that Gemara? The question is, what is the impact of Hamotzi Mechaver Lo Haraya? Is it simply that we just don't get involved because how can we interfere if we don't actually have proof? And in that case, if the Yisrael has it, we leave it with him. If the Kohen has it, we leave it with him. But we don't really know, either halachically or actually, what the story is here. Or does it mean more than that? Is it a principle of establishing halacha, that if there's no raya, so then the muchzak is the one who is going to keep it, and that means it's his alpidin, it's his for all intents and purposes. He can use it for ma'aser v'hema, he can use it for a lulav on sukkos, he can use it to mekadesh anisha. So the impression one gets from that sugya is that that's what a motzei mechaver lo haraya means. So, says Rabbi Chanan, our Gemara seems to be against that. Now, I mentioned you could argue on the premises because everything here is... okay. So you never... Thank you. It wouldn't hurt. Thank you. Everything here is based on a premise here, but he's assuming that if our conclusion in the Gemara is that a motzei mechaver lo haraya is obvious, it's a svara, so then how could you tell me that it also creates this reality that whatever you're holding is yours? Presumably, it just means that there's no reason to pick the motzei over the muchzak, but it doesn't really grant status to the muchzak. That's a chiddush. If it's a chiddush, it should need a pasuk. It's not a svar. So how could our Gemara conclude that it's a svar? Now, we saw that there's some room to question what the conclusion is, but that's where the question is coming from. And the Rabbi Chanan wrote that because of that, that's why the Rambam says that Tosfos Kohen Ein Motzi Miyado, because if it's really a svara, then it must be the less ambitious din here. That just means we don't get involved. And it's a very lumdish approach to say that the Rambam paskins that sugi in Bava Metzia purely based on the conclusion of our Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is talking about a different aspect. So, in considering this question, let's introduce another factor here. The Kutras HaSvekis, which is a sefer that was written by the brother of the Ketos HaChosha. Parents had interesting names for their kids. Kutras HaSvekis. So the Kutras HaSvekis happens to be printed together with the Ketos in many editions. That's where you can find it. So in the in Perek Aleph and Simon Vav, the Kutras HaSvekis quotes the Mari Basan, with Chil Basan, as asking the following question. He says, why do we assume Hamotzi Mechavero Olo Haraya? Now, it's just helpful, just for accuracy here, that many quote this, the question this way. It's interesting, if you look at it inside, the question is phrased a little bit differently, and it's worth paying attention to just because it may be important to be precise here in what is the cause of what. So the way the question is actually asked there is, we have a principle of Kimli. Kimli means that if, let's say, Jed and I get into a fight over some monetary issue, and I have the weight of halacha is on my side, but Jed happens to be the muchzak. So if there is a minority opinion, or maybe two minority opinions, a little bit of a discussion what the standard is. But if there is essentially a minority on Jed's side, and Jed is the muchzak, he can say, Kimli, I hold like that opinion. So because of his edge as the muchzak, he's allowed to invoke the minority view.
Because he's holding, because he has the chazaka.
That's what it seems like.
meaning that we don't care about the minority. It doesn't matter that it's the minority.
Is that true? Well, we'll have to see if that's the case. We'll get to that. But, so a view in halacha that's not necessarily the dominant view, so the muchzak has the right to invoke that to keep what he has. And that's, we're not going to get into the discussion now of the klolim of Kimli. There's a lot to talk about. How much of a minority view does it have to be? Does everything count as a minority view? I think we discussed it earlier this year, right? We were talking about the case for the stamps, right? That the idea that if somebody is mazik one stamp and leaves you with another stamp, it becomes more valuable. So we mentioned the whole machlokas in the Achronim about whether that should pater the mazik. And we invoked the question there of, does the machlokas create a basis for him, for the mazik, who is the muchzak, he has the money, for he, can he say, I hold like the minority view here that says I'd be pater. So his question is, why do we say Kimli by Maminus? We don't say it by Isurim. If you want to eat some food, which most poskim say is Aser, say Aser Minat Torah, so you can't say, well, Kimli like the view that it's okay. We would say there, Safik Daraisa L'chumra. And one would have to be Machmir in such a case. Right?
Because in any case where it's DNA Mamonos, there's two sides, so it'd be Machmer and
Lumber. Okay, so that's very good. So that's probably relevant. But let's just speak out the question first before going to the answers. But you're right, I think that's a major part of it. But essentially, why don't you say that if there's a suffix, yes, there would have to be Machmer? So here also, there is a suffix Gezel. So, who's the suffix on? He's saying there's a suffix on the muchzak. Suffix that maybe he is a gazel.
Part of the question is just asking, why isn't mamon viewed as isik?
No? That's related, correct. So, a part of what you're seeing here, the reason I want to be precise about this, is just to call attention to the joining of different concepts. Because the way the Kutras HaSvekis is quoted is, why do we say Hamotze Mechaver Olav Haraya and not worry about the Safek Gezel? Now, when you look at it inside, you see he's talking about Kimli, Marie Bassan's question. So the assumption is that these are all one package. Kimli, Muchzak, Mutzmerchavelavaraya. And we have mentioned throughout that there's some room to question that. But also, if you look in the Krunchlos Fakis in the previous Simon, in Aleph Hay, so he mentions there that the din of Muchzak is a svara because of Baba Kama Daf Mem Zayin. So again, it just highlights that many are assuming that Muchzak and Moshe Michavel of Haraya are all the same. I want to preserve the possibility that might not be true, but that's certainly how many understand it. And he says it there, like others do as well. Oh, Muchzak, we know because of the svara. So we saw that there's some room to try to figure out what's the nature of the svara. You know, is the svara meaning that the effort should be put on somebody who's trying to be motzi from somebody else? Is the svara telling us a different point? So he is among the many who are assuming that this svara of the Kaiv Li Kaiva is the source for Muchzak, essentially. So similarly, in the next simon he says, so therefore Kimli, which many are assuming is the same thing as Motzei Mechavel Avaraya, is questionable, because why don't we worry about the Safek Gezel? Now, the question to me is a little surprising, and I think the simplest answer is, and a little bit this is kind of related to what he says, and other Achronim talk about this also, and there's an overlap between the answers. This is what the Marie Bassan says a little bit, that there would be a suffix on both parts. Right, so, which I think is related to what Jacob started to say before, that there's a suffix on the motzi, it's a suffix gezel, and there's a suffix gezel also on the one keeping it, shalom and hadin. So, it's important to note that it seems like it's not just in general, b'chol ha'Torah kula, that we say a kum va'aseh is usually more chomer than a sheva al-taseh. You know, to do something active is worse than to just passively not do it, usually. So it seems like if we have to have one of the parties here a risk gezel, that we'd rather have the risk be on the one who's keeping it rather than the one who's taking it away from somewhere else. But it's even probably more than that, just in terms of defining what is gezel. That there's a discussion about this in the beginning of Maseches Sanhedrin. Rashi talks about it there. There are other sources that are relevant to this. But the question of whether holding on to something that you have already and not, let's say, paying back a debt, is that it seems to be some type of gezel. That's how some of the Rishonim phrase it. But it's clearly a different category than somebody who actively takes somebody else's property. So failing to pay up to someone else, even if you call that gezel, it's hard to see that it's on the same category, it's on the same level as somebody taking from somebody else. So it seems like kind of a pretty straightforward approach that if they both have the issue of a suffix gezel, that you would prefer to leave it with the one who has it already than the one who's taking it. And that's what's alluded to in the way the Marie Bassan. However, some Achronim, including the Krunchlos HaSfekis and the Chassam Sofer and others, are not totally comfortable with that approach. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva written to Rav Shach, actually, in the first chelek of Yerideya, where he has a tshuva to Rav Shach and about this whole mahalach. And what they're not totally comfortable with is, it's not always equal. Like, if it was the only question, we have a motzi and a mochzok, and either one of them could possibly be violating gezel, so let's leave it with a sheva al-tasa rather than a kum v'aseh. Okay, if they're the only facts that are relevant, so that, okay, that's very compelling. But there are scenarios where it really tilts things. And one might assume that the risk of gezel is greater on the muchzak than it is on the motzi. For example, a little foreshadowing, What about if there's a rov? And if there's a rov on the part of the motzi, so doesn't that make it more likely that he's right rather than the muchzak? So if the only issue is that we would, by default, leave it with the person who already has it because of the risk on both sides, if that risk is already skewed, then maybe you shouldn't say that. You hear the objection? Yeah, that on the surface it seems like a pretty straightforward approach to say, listen, me and Jed are fighting over something. Either one of us could be risking Gezel by not allowing the other to have it. So if those are all the facts that we have, so then let's leave it with the person who has it, because a Shev Al Tasa makes more sense than to take it away from the other guy. So it's true, if that's all you have, that certainly seems very compelling. But, as the Krunchless Fakus himself says, and as other Achronim object also, it's not always that that's the whole side of the facts. There are some situations where the motzi really has more to go with, such as a rov. And yet we know in Hocham Amanach a rov. So if those are the cases, so why do we even say in that case that, yeah, there's a bigger concern that there's an Isser Gezel on the one holding on to it than there would be on the one taking it away?
Is it invoking rov?
That's one example. It's one of the ways. So the Krishna's Fakus mentions rov to push his question. Other Achronim, Ramosha talks about a different scenario. Other Achronim bring up other kinds of cases, but the point being that it doesn't address every situation where we let the Muchzuk hold on to it. There are situations where the odds are not equal and where there is a much greater or at least somewhat greater risk on the one holding on to it that he's the Goslin than the other way around. And yet we still say Amotzim Echaver Lovarai. So why is that? So here, again, I want to be very precise in quoting things. So the Kunchas Fakus himself has a different approach. And he quotes the Tumim, the Gernis and Ibshitz, as saying something similar. And I want to be precise in the way it's quoted, but also fleshing it out. So the way it's quoted is that maybe we should say that by very definition, Gezel only applies to Vadai Gezel and not Suffolk Gezel. Like we find, perhaps like we find in some other areas of the Torah where the Gemara has a drasha, that vadai velo safek, you find this in a couple of areas of halacha. So maybe that's true also, that the nature of gezel is that it's only true when it's definite. Now, here again, I think it needs to be fleshed out a little bit more. And the Krunchless Fakus does say a little bit more than that. Because if you just leave it at that, it's a little unsatisfying. Because it sounds like, okay, this is Gzeiros HaKasuv that Gezel only applies in definite cases. And if anything, that actually makes the question stronger. Because, you know, why should that be? And why should it be different than other Isurim where we say Safek L'chumra? And as we'll mention in a few minutes, there are some who ask that if that's the case, that's a bigger chiddush. So if that comes from our Gemara, so then again, why do we say it's a svara? It's not a svara. You're definitely the pasuk to establish that. Just like in other areas of halacha, we have sources in the Torah that indicate a sadin is only vaday and not safek. So here, if you're telling me gezel only applies when it's a vaday, so then, for sure, that's a chiddush. So, that, and again, also the halach lamais implications would sound funny. It would be like as if, well, if I see something lying around and I'm not sure if it's mine, it looks like mine, but it might be somebody else's, so maybe I should be able to take it because the safek gezel and the safek lo asra Torah ela vaday. So I don't think that that's what we mean here. And indeed, if you look at the language of the Krishna Sveik, he quotes the Tumim where it's succinctly, but if you look at the language the Kritzos Fekus says in his part of it, I think he's saying a little bit more than that. He's not saying that if something is a suffix, so it's like exeris hakasuv, that gezel doesn't apply to that. He's saying that the nature of gezel is that you take something which al pi hilchos mamonis is not yours. And if the rule is, if the din is, that a suffix is, we leave it with the muhsak, so that means that the halacha allows you to keep it. And therefore, for somebody else to take it, he would be the gazlan, and you're not the gazlan because you're following dinei mamonis. Dinei mamonis define what gezel is and isn't. And that's a little more palatable. It's not saying that this isser is somehow less chomer. No one meant to say this, but it almost could be giving you the impression, if you just left it as is, that this is somehow less chomer than chazer. Chazer will say sofik l'chomer, but gezel only vaday. It's not that. It's that the definition of gezel is taking something that's not yours al pi din. So if the din is established this way, so then by definition it's not gezel to keep it.
Definitely taking it back, then the person would be constituted as gezel.
That if the halacha says that the motzi mechaver lo haraya, so then for the machzik to hold on to it,
okay.
It's not a, there's no possibility of gezel there. Now, we're assuming, by the way, that this person didn't knowingly steal the object. A person knowingly stole an object, so then to say, well, because the motzi mechaver haraya, because Bezin's not going to get involved, that this guy is innocent klapei shmaya. Let's assume that we don't know otherwise whose it really is. There's some kind of genuine suffix. So if the halacha is a motzi mechaver lo haraya, so then that tells us that al pi din he's allowed to keep it. Al pi din is allowed to keep it. There's no possibility of gezel. Now that could be true, by the way, according to all the possibilities we discussed yesterday. Even if you say a motzi mechaver lo is a din suffix, if you say it's a vadai midin birur, if you say it's a vadai midin hanhag, I think with all the possibilities are going to be true. But still, the iser gezel means for you to take or keep something that is not al pi din permitted to you to keep. So if that's the case, so then, okay, it's not like a gzeris hakasuv. It's a part of how the whole system works. So this is addressed also by Rav Shimon Shkop. Rav Shimon Shkop, Zechzayek Levracha, was the great Rosh Yeshiva, the author of the Shari Yosher, which we're going to be mentioning in a second, and the Shiurim were published also, and it was a great Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva, but of course we particularly recognize that he was for a short time a Rebbe in this Yeshiva. I guess you'll see next week when his farm sale starts, it'll be in Afkamina when they have the Wayu Rosh Yeshiva table, if the Shari Yoshers and the Chedush Reb Shimons are on that table or elsewhere. But, because there's some who may argue he was more well known for his accomplishments outside Yeshiva University. But okay, in any event, he was here for a short period of time. So Reb Shimon basically explains that. And he raises the question that we mentioned a second ago, that if you're going to say Safek Gezel is Mutter, so then isn't that a bigger Chiddush? Don't we need a Pasuk for sure, and not simply to say it's a Svara? And he posits that there's a fundamental difference between Mamonis and Isser. And this is a somewhat controversial approach. There are those who question this approach. I said that as far as mamonis, it's defined differently than, let's say, chazer, the reality of the prohibition of chazer or any other yordea type iser, is defined based on how the Torah addresses it as a chok. But the mishpatim, there is an element of how human beings relate to it. That it has an inherent intellectual reality. So when it comes to the principle of chazaka, so Chazal understood logically that whatever is in somebody's possession is associated with them. I'm using that word associated to be a little vague because maybe you still have room to question. Is it assumed to actually be theirs? Is it halachically theirs? I want to leave open all those possibilities, so I'll speak vaguely, but whatever a person is holding is associated with them. So that's how they understood it. That's how they understood it logically. So that's an approach that works for Mishpatim and it doesn't apply to Chukim. And this perhaps fits with what we talked about in Parsha Shir last Thursday and about the nature of the difference between the two. So here, that's how Reb Shimon understands that there is that fundamental difference. So yeah, it's a svara, that basically we have a svara how properties should be assigned. And once we figure that out, so the Isser Gezel flows from that. You follow? Yeah, not everyone agrees. This is it's discussed a little bit both in the Shiurim of Shimon Shkap and the Shari Osher. Shari Osher is worth being aware of if we haven't mentioned it recently. Shari Osher is a sefer that is patterned after the format of the Shev Shmaisa. Shev Shmaisa was a sefer written by the Ktzos, supposedly when he was 17 years old. Many Rebbeim like saying if you wrote it by the time he was 17, you could read it by the time you're 17 at least. But he updated it because like, he quotes the son in one place in the Shmaisa. So you know, if he was an Eloi, can imagine how much the son must have been an Eloi if the father was 17. So that was added later. But in event, so both the Shmaisa and the Shari Osher, they talk about some of the most complex, abstract topics that we have touched upon here these past few days, issues of Eidus and Chazaka and Rov and Sfekos. These are all the substance of what gets talked about in the Shari Osher and the Shmaitz and the like. So in this context, that's what the whole Sefer is about, so that's what Rav Shimon talks about, that maybe there's a fundamental difference in how Mominus is established as opposed to Isser. Parenthetically, while we're talking about the Shari Osher, he has a particularly beautiful Hakdama, and if you're going to look through the Shari Osher, would certainly recommend reading the very quotable and the significant Hakdama. But in any event, so that's an approach that he has there, and he says that also would therefore perhaps explain why there is a angle that one can take, that it's a svara that doesn't need a pasuk to establish it. Rav Moshe and his tshuva is a long tshuva they wrote to Rav Shach, but one of the points he makes in terms of trying to figure out whether you should treat something as a suffik iser or a suffik mammon, says we have to figure out what comes first. You know, is there some halachic iser that's relevant, and then we have to figure out whether this is in that category or some other category, or is it that the mammonis is defined first? So when we're talking about something like gezel, by its very nature, the mominus has to be defined first. So then you can apply a different set of rules and say that if the rule is in dine mominus, that you keep it. So then by definition, it's not going to be subject to gezel. There are a few other approaches to that whole question, just to mention for the sake of comprehensiveness. If you look in the Beis Medrash, there's a fancy ksos, it's many volumes with pretty extensive footnotes. So one of the volumes has the Kinshas Vekas in it. So in the footnotes over there, he quotes many other achronim who deal with this question, a whole page of footnotes pretty much about this. And he mentions that Shmos Yaakov has other approaches to this question, that maybe we're more makel because of the Kumbase Shev Al Tase issue, but he's to focus a little bit differently, not saying that one party is in a Kumbase position and one party is in a Shev Al Tase question, in a Shev Al Tase position, which prompts the question that what if they're not equal, but rather just however the two sides stack up, the fact is the one who's holding it is only risking a Shev Al Tase, and that's different than saying, okay, Sofik Chazer, you could eat it, because that would be a Kumbase violation. So the only difference from that and what we said before is it's not just about looking at the relative risks of the two sides, it's about weighing the risk of the Suffolk Gezel versus Suffolk chazer. And he also mentions the Shvus Yaakov, an approach that in general we are, you find this in Rishonim and other contexts, that there is a tzad kula when it comes to mamonis, because it's always reversible. That if you decide later there was a mistake, so then you could have that guy pay the first guy back. But when it comes to other things, so it's not reversible. So let's say Safek Yisr, if you eat the chazer and then you realize later that it actually was chazer, so there's nothing you could do to undo that, as opposed to mamonis, which is an interesting side topic to consider. Just how does that play into halacha in general, the fact that you can fix your mistakes later, as opposed to situations where you can't. That's an interesting side topic to consider. So, in any event, that's all relevant to considering also now our segue into Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya, into Hochem Amanach HaRov, Ein Hochem Amanach HaRov. Just want to kind of recap that what we've seen here is a number of different possibilities of what the Chiddush of Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya is, and that affects whether it's logically intuitive or not. It also remains to be somewhat of a machlokes whether it is identical with the topic of muchzak. Is it essentially saying muchzak, so therefore you can't take from the muchzak, or is it saying something else? And I should point out also that I believe you also taught here the Mechter Iloi, which Shlomo Palachek, who was a Talmud of Reb Chaim Brisker, and the Sefer Kishmo Kainhul's really was Iloi. Everything you read in that Sefer is very, very brilliant. But he has a discussion there where he maintains that Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya is not Midin Muchzak. It's separate from Muchzak, in that we find that it applies even when you don't have an absolute Chazak on the other side. And among what you can see from the different possibilities here, doesn't have to line up 100%, but I think part of what emerges here is that either you could say Hamotzu Mechal Varaya is about establishing the Gedarim of the Mamanus, if we have to choose which side, we side with the Muchzak rather than with the Motzi, and therefore it is about Muchzak. Or you could say it's not about Muchzak, it's just about what allows you to take things. And you can't take things from somebody else without a proof. Otherwise, society is going to be totally hefker. So in order to be legitimate in taking something from somebody else, you have to have a riot. And perhaps the principle could exist even without muchzak, even without necessarily saying that the other guy is a halachic muchzak. But simply the act of being motzi from somebody, that can't just happen haphazardly. That has to happen with some type of proof. And these are among the possibilities in understanding what this concept means. And it's very possible that they're both true. It's very possible that both dinim are emerging from our Gemara, that you shouldn't take stuff without proof, and that the halachic status rests with the muchzak when we have to choose between the two sides. Okay, so far so good. Everybody clear? Okay, so now let's transition into issues of Rov, which our Gemara itself does, and consider how that applies B'chol HaTorah Kula. So this will take us, you know, at least a little while, but we'll start it today, and we'll continue it next time. But our Gemara brings up that topic also, right? That B'mono Lo Azlinim Basar Ruva. So first of all, let's give some general words of introduction. So we know that Al Pidin, Rov is respected in Halacha. That happens to be, I don't know if anybody's holding in Daf Yomi, by now it's already 2 months ago, but in Chulin and Daf Yud Aleph, there is a lot of beautiful lumdas in Chulin, people should know and appreciate. On Daf Yud Aleph in Chulin, the Gemara has a whole Daf trying to figure out how we know that we rely on Rov from HaTorah. But we generally assume that a Rov is respected, lahalacha. And we say, Acher Rabbi Mahatos. that we should follow the Rov. Now, there are many different kinds of Rov, and we'll have to see if that impacts on this discussion. But we know that at least in some cases, on some level, Rov is a tool min haTorah, that Rov is not an innovation of Chazal, but it is effective fully, 100%. Now, we get a little bit of a mixed impression in terms of how it affects Dinei Nefashos, because on the one hand, in terms of Hatzalah, in terms of saving people, and let's say being Docha Shabbos or Docha Yom Kippur, so when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, so we say that we don't go B'Nefashos Achar Harov. Okay. So here, this is primarily a Gemara in Maseches Yuma, built off the Mishnah and Daf Pei Gimel. And as we pointed out eventually, that the Gemara expands on that in Daf Pei Dalet and Pei Hei in Yuma. But it's to establish that in the halachos where Pikuach Nefesh overrides halacha, so we say that's true even if it's only a miut. So if somebody decides that, or somebody is considering to eat a kippur because it may be a risk to life, so then we say that it's not only if it's 100% risk to life or 100% going to be life-saving for him to eat, but even if it's a miut, if there's a miut risk or a miut possibility of hatzalah, so then we'll eat on Yom Kippur and we'll be mechal Shabbos. So the Gemara in Yuma has it in both contexts, the context of somebody eating on Yom Kippur, and also somebody involved in life-saving activities on Shabbos, if a building falls on somebody and it's not clear if he's alive anymore. So if a person is not alive, so then it's not a pikuach nefesh situation. But if there is a possibility of saving the person's life, so then Rabbi Michal Shabbos in order to do that. And in that context, the Gemara says that we don't follow Rov for that purpose. That Gemara happens to be one of the major sources in terms of determining the definition of death. It's a very significant text for a very major contemporary controversy, the question of what steps do you take to establish whether somebody is still alive or not. So on the one hand, there we find that for nefashos, we don't follow Rov. However, for other purposes that do affect nefashos, we do follow Rov. And the Gemara has that in at least two different ways. On that daf in Chulin, the Gemara says that, let's say, when you talk about a chi of Misa for somebody who hits his father. So one could ask, well, how is that ever possible? Because isn't there always room, at least in the pre-DNA world, to wonder if the father is actually the father? And if that's the case, so then how could you put someone to death for hitting his father? Maybe it's not his father. So we assume that no, we have a chazaka, we have a rov, it's a type of chazaka in this case, we have a rov b'ilos achar abal, that most people are the son of their mother's husbands. So therefore, we have the right to assume, unless we know otherwise, even in that case of Dinei Nefashos, to apply the death penalty, that the father is the father, the presumptive father is the actual father. And, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Gimel says, that we also follow a rov for life and death issues, because when we have to decide whether to give someone the death penalty, so we follow the majority vote. Follow Rov Dayanan. So if that's the case, so apparently even in matters of life and death, we follow the Rov. Now the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Avgimel and Beis, if you got that far, so the Gemara tries to figure out how do you know that in a monetary case, we have, let's say, three Dayanan sitting in judgment of a monetary case. How do you know that we follow the Rov? We follow the 2-1. We follow the 2 in a 2-1 vote. So the approach that Gemara seems to conclude with is, well, we know that we follow the majority votes in a nefashas case. So if we follow it in a nefashas case, kal v'chomer, we should follow it in a mamonis case. Right? That we just mentioned a few minutes ago. Mamonis, you can reverse. If you make a mistake, it turns out that there was an error, so then you can fix the mistake with mamonis. If there's an error in a capital case, chas v'shalom, you can't fix the mistake. So if you follow Rove to establish the decision in Nefashos, then Kal v'chomer, you should follow it for Kal v'chomer, you should follow it for Dinei Mamonis. So that, as Tosfos points out in a few places, that seems to present a pretty blatant question. Because here the Gemara itself is telling us the intuitive Kal v'chomer, that Mamonis should be less of a chiddush than the Nefashos. And yet we have Gemaras like our Gemara that tell us, even though it's a machlokas Rav Shmuel, but we seem to paskin that ain holchem b'mamon acher harov. So Tosfos in a few places asked this question. Other Rishonim asked this question. It's quite glaring. Right, how do you deal with that to say that we'll follow Rov for Nefashos but not for Mamonis? So let's look at, because if you have a Bava Kamma here, so let's look at the one that's in Bava Kamma. Tosfos, for example, asks this question both in Bava Kamma and in Sanhedrin and gives very different answers. But let's, at least for today, start with the Tosfos and Bava Kamma. So if you look on Chav Zayin Amud Beis, so Tosfos raises this question. Look at it together. Tosfos asks, the top Tosfos on Chav Zayin Amud Beis, says Tema. This whole idea of Ein Holchem Unachar Rov, that's surprising. Ma Tam Ein Holchem? Why shouldn't we follow a Rov? Lesse Bekal V'chomer Midin Nefashos. Let's look at Din Nefashos and learn from there. Kedam Rinam Parakam the Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yosha Maisa the Kabachom Midin Nefashos. That in terms of how we follow how many Dayanim, that it's a Kabachomer from Din Nefashos. Oma Din Nefashos, the Chamiri, Amrachman is Ilbas the Ruva, Din Mamanus the Kalshikin. So if that's the case, just like the Gemara assumes there, so for whatever reason, why don't we say that here as well? Now, should mention before going further that it would be legitimate for you to say, well, are there possibly different kinds of roves in the world? And we use the term rove to mean different things, and you could probably come up with a lot of distinctions, but just primarily one distinction that we have in halacha, we say Aruba d'issa kaman and Aruba d'lessa kaman, which would literally translate to a rove that's in front of us and a rove that's not in front of us. And there's some discussion how to translate those phrases, but for simplicity, we'll relate to it like this, that a rov, the issakaman, is a rov that you can see, you can count, it's a 6-4, you know there's a 2-1, that's a ruba de issakaman. While a ruba de lessakaman is also, we sometimes call a chazaka. It means like the majority of people out there, that most of the circumstances are like such. So, like Rov B'ilos Achar Abba, we mentioned before, it's not that we're counting up all the situations and we can see that it's 70-30, it's that this is the premise, that this is mostly how it happens. So you might be understandable if you want to distinguish and say, well, maybe we can distinguish between a Ruba D'Issa Kaman and a Ruba D'Lessa Kaman. So to say, with a Bezdin, we follow the two judges against the one judge, okay, it's a Ruba D'Issa Kaman, it's easy to see what's going on. But some general societal rove, Aruba d'lessa kaman, so that, maybe that's weaker. So if you wanted to make such a distinction, I hear where you're coming from, but Tosfos says don't go there. Right? So Tosfos says, v'afil Aruba d'lessa kaman is in the beginning of the Fashas Bas Aruba. But we see that even when it's Aruba d'lessa kaman, even when it's what we might think is the less powerful rove, We follow that also when it comes to dini nefashos. Kedama b'reishar emara. Fine. So that's not the answer. To distinguish between the two, that's not going to do it. So here, Tosfos has a fascinating approach. It's not the only approach. We'll probably have to see next time some of the other approaches. But let's focus on this approach first. It says, Yesh lomar, dohasam gabedayonim, the idea that we will follow it for the dayonim, shiny, that's different. Dechashiv miut dido kmi she'eno, that the minority is as if it doesn't exist. It doesn't make sense to say over there, Oki mamona v'chezkes mare, that let's just leave the mominus and the property of the one who's holding on to it. The ha bezgin mafkimine, because it's this bezdin that is going to take it out based on its vote. Avalgabe shar mamon, but other monetary issues. D'ika miut v'chazaka, lo azlina basaruba. That in other cases where the miut continues to exist, and therefore the muhzak doesn't just have a chazaka. He has a chazaka and he also has a miut, so then that's different. Daniel?
To clarify, why is Tosu saying that the miut by the other case is bad versus our case? What's...
Yeah, it's clearly a big chiddush, right? This Tosfos is very lumdish and has left it for others to explain. For example, Reb Chaim in the Stencils, in the Chiddushi HaGrach, has a comment on this Tosfos to explain it. And many others explain it in a similar fashion. But what would you think? What is the difference here? How would you understand what Tosfos just said? The Tosfos' basic distinction is that when it comes to the Bezdin case, that we follow most Dayanim, we follow the two against the one, that is because the Miut is as if it doesn't exist. The Miut is Kamisha Eino. While in the situations where we don't follow the Rov, right, you recall, like our Gemara had quoted one of the cases that's used as a primary example. Remember the case from our Gemara, that if you have a seller and a purchaser arguing about what an ox was sold for. Was it sold, the buyer says he bought it to plow with, and therefore it bothers him that it's a dangerous ox. And the seller said, I sold it thinking you were going to sheft it, so it doesn't matter if it's dangerous. And how do we figure out who's right? And what about the fact that most people buy it for work? So should we say, let's look at the Rov? And the Gemara says, no, that we paskin ein holchan achar Rov. So in the case of the Dayanim, the Miut, as if it's not there. But in the cases where we don't follow the Rov, like that case with the ox, so then the Miut is there on the side of the Muchzak. Or as some Rishonim put it, smoch miuta l'chazaka. That's... it's not just the chazaka, but the chazaka is also marshaling the power of the miut. What does that mean? Clearly, there's a lot of lumdus hidden in this answer. Yeah? Okay, well, it could be relevant to the broad picture.
But like saying that I have a miut on my side, so I have a case to make an argument against you, as opposed to the miut's not
okay,
there.
Okay, so expand on that.
Well, if the miut's not there, then
and where'd the miut go in the case of the Bezdin?
Well, it's just not right.
Especially because I would think we were talking about Kimley, it's actually there. That model is more similar to a Bezdin model.
Well, once the Dayan decided on it, didn't. I mean, uh-huh. It's the proper din.
Okay, so that's an important point. So let's flesh that out a little bit more.
As opposed to, in your case, if you're looking at different types of, I guess, you know, you don't want different types of sellers.
Well, so Kailui Reb Chaim says it, another say like this also, it's probably the most intuitive understanding of what Tosfos is saying, is that when you paskin based on two out of three Dayanim, it's not like you're saying, well, looking at the landscape here, we have a 66% chance of being right, so let's take that to be safest. A Bezdin's psak is defined by the majority rule. So once the Bezdin decide something, that is the unanimous, was unanimous in the right word, but that is the single psak of the Beis Din. It's not the two-thirds psak, that is the conclusion of the Beis Din. It's similar to a presidential election. Now, the presidential election, however one might feel about one candidate or the other, so let's say it ends up being 51-49. This is commonly the case. So then the president is not the president only 51%. He's the president 100%. That was established based on the majority vote. So he's not now mostly president and the other guy is partially president. So too, when the Sanhedrin or when the Beis Din decides something, the Beis Din is saying this is our final answer, which they got to through majority vote. And in fact, the Gemara says that the minority for him to try to hold on to his status and tell the guy who lost that I voted for you is an Ester Achilles. He doesn't have an independent identity here. He is a part of this Beis Din that decided one way, and that's the final story. But when you don't have a Beis Din deciding, you're just looking at the facts out there and saying, well, my case is stronger because 80% of the people are doing it that way. So yeah, you're right, it is stronger. But it's not an absolute. And a miut is significant because a miut is less than a rove. But the existence of a miut means that there are some people in that category. If you were dealing with a 100% rove, it's okay, there's nothing to talk about. But if 10% of the people do something differently, so then that gives credibility to the other view because there are 1 out of 10 people who are doing this. So then it adds up that there are now really 2 factors on behalf of the Muchzak. That the Muchzak is holding on to it, and he might be right that indeed there's a portion of the population that does what he says. So therefore, he has these 2 factors connected. While the Motzi only has the rove. Now, it's interesting because, like I said, this is not the only approach in the Rishonim at all. And one has to figure out what exactly you mean by saying that. Hi. Well, we're trying to figure out why we don't say Rov and Mammon. So maybe we don't say Rov and Mammon because the Miyat exists and the Miyat is working with the Chazaka.
So the Rov only works when there is no Miyat, essentially, is what we're saying.
Perhaps, yeah. And so in the case of the Sanhedrin, it's as if it doesn't work. As if it doesn't exist, rather. Now, it's just interesting because to go back to what you said before when you brought in Kimli, so saying theoretically, if I wanted to make a comparison, Kimli is about one day among Poskim. So you might think that's more comparable to one Dayan among Dayanim. But there's a fundamental difference because those Dayanim vote and therefore negate the existence of the dissenting opinion. While Poskim in contemporary halachic literature did not get together and vote. And therefore those Miut still endure. So even though it would have seemed like that's the natural comparison, that difference is very fundamental. But we have to figure out a little bit more about this Tosfos because, okay, on the surface it makes sense. So basically it's 2 points against 1 point. The Motzi just has his Rov, and the Muchzak has Miut plus Chazaka, so he has 2 things. So if you're like playing a card game, he's got 2 cards, the first guy has 1 card. Now, you would think that would actually then change the dynamics, if there has any meaning to it, that if the Motzi doesn't have a Rov, so certainly we're not going to b'motzi mamon for him. But maybe it's a different kind of power to it, because maybe the muchzak, if the muchzak has, if it's 50-50, so then they cancel each other out, so then the muchzak is maybe even more clearly the winner here. But that's something that's a little abstract. But what's an important point here to consider, and it may be a question on Tosa's approach, is does the chazaka exist independently of the miut? Are those two separate things? That, oh, he has the chazaka and he also has the miut. Daniel, would you want to say about that?
Not about that, actually.
Because maybe the miut is necessary, but it is essentially the same thing as the chazaka, because so close. Okay. If you say that chazaka is supposed to indicate something meaningful beyond itself, that it's not just that you have the item, but that that shows something about what the truth is more likely to be. So, what if there was no miut? What if 100% of the people, 100% of all the cases was the other way? So then, presumably, the chazaka wouldn't be meaningful. Right? If we know that the only way you could have gotten this is if you took it from the other guy, you stole it. Because in 100% of all cases, it would be the other guy's. So then, the chazaka would presumably not mean anything about reality. The only reason it means something about reality is because there's a chance the machzik is right. So when it's 50-50, so then the machzik has a 50% chance of being right. And, well, the fact that he's holding on to it, that pushes it over the edge. And what we're seeing here is that the possession, I guess to borrow the phrase from American culture, which maybe the math winds up here, if you say possession is 9/10 of the law, okay, so then he has 90 out of 100 points for holding on to it. And if the rove is an 80-20 rove, so he has a 20% chance that it actually is his, and 90 points for being the one holding on to it, and if it's 9/10 of the law, so that, okay, those numbers add up in his side. But it's not that you're adding two separate things. It's that you need the miut in order for the chazaka to be meaningful. If there was no miut, then the chazaka wouldn't mean anything. Unless you understand chazaka differently. So that's something to think about. Are these really two different points? Or, and again, Tosus, I guess you could read it different ways. But however you read this phrase, Gabe Shar Mamon De'ika Miut V'Chazaka Lo Zinu Basaruba. So it could mean that the it's really one thing, that the Chazaka is powerful. Maybe it's 9/10 of the law. But it's only powerful because there is a Miut. And were the Rove to be so absolute that it wiped out the Miut, then you wouldn't follow the Rove. So really, it's one thing, but we have to explain why the Sanhedrin doesn't follow the Rove. Right? So then you have to kind of ask the question backwards. That Tosfos isn't explaining why the Machzik gets to hold on to his property. That's because he has really he has one reason he can hold on to his property. Because he has the Chazaka, and the Chazaka could actually be real because there is a minority that reflects those facts. But then, the question is, so why not by the Beis Din? By the Beis Din, why don't we say that also that the Machzik should be able to hold on to his one Dayan out of the three? So the real Chiddush is about that. The Chiddush is that in Dayanim, when they vote together, they obliterate the other guy. The other guy is negated to the Rove. And as Reb Chaim mentions the comparison, it's not really, we shouldn't really call it Azlinun Basa Rove. It's actually the related but different concept of rubo kikulo, that we define the item by the majority. So because Rubo Kukulo, so there isn't any meter to hold on to. As opposed to when they don't vote. If they don't vote together and you have a Kimberly kind of situation, then indeed that's the case, that maybe Kimberly Taka does work like a normal Ein Holchem Mamon Acha Harov situation, that there are some poskim who think he's right, and he also has a possession. Okay, so we're going to have to consider what some of the other approaches to this whole issue are and how they play out. So we certainly have at least another day to talk about this, but let's just quickly recap. We spoke about a lot today, so quickly recap what we spoke about. So we started off again talking from Reb Chaim's, from Reb Chanan rather, Reb Chanan's apparent steer between Reb Metzia Davav and Ardaf and Bava Kama about do you need a pasuk or not, how much of a chiddush is Hamosim Mechaber Lo Haraya, and then we examine that in light of the question of Mari Basan, the Kuntos Fekas quotes, that why don't we say in Kimli, and he's apparently identifying Hamosim Mechaber Haraya with this principle, why don't we say that you're only worried about that the Motzi might be violating Gezel, isn't the Machzik also potentially violating Gezel? So one approach, as the Mari Basan, is to say that they're both potentially violating Gezel, so we should side with the Sheval Tasa and let the person who already has it keep it. That's clearly the safer approach. And then many Achronim, including the Kinshas Fekas, raise the objection that, yeah, it's clearly the safer approach if everything else is equal. But there are many scenarios where the Motzi has more on his side, such as if there's a rove. So if the Motzi has more on his side, there's a greater risk of Gezel on the Machzik than there is on the Motzi. Why don't we say it that way? So the Kinshas Fekas himself, he quotes the Tumim, and he himself says that there's only an Isser Gezel when it's a Vadei Gezel. So we discuss that a little further, because it sounds like Gezel is less chomer than other Yisurim, where we're machmer, safik, deraisa, l'chomra, and Gezel not. If anything, that just reiterates the whole question, both in terms of why should that difference exist, and also, like Rav Shimon points out, that's what our Gemara is saying, and Bava Kama, it's a bigger chiddush, all the more so you need a pasuk in order to say that. So we went further and said it doesn't mean that the safik is less scary to us than it would be in other areas of halacha. What we mean is that the nature of the Isser is defined by the halachic parameters. So if the halacha says you're allowed to keep it, so then that's not subject to an Isser Gezel. And Shimon himself took that further and said that the whole nature of Mamonis is different than Isser, where Isser is treated as a chok and its facts are what the Torah says, while Mamonis is defined by how people relate to it, and the Isser Gezel flows from there. And that affects also to what extent then it's a chiddush or a svar. And then we just recap how the different perspectives of Motzi Mechaber Haraya could affect things differently in the nature of the chiddush, and it could be there's more than one din. And we mentioned the Meitzter Iloi that when it comes to Motzi Mechaber Haraya, he thinks it's not the same din as Mochzak, and it applies when you don't have Mochzak on the other end. And we talked about how that could affect the whole understanding. And then we segued into Rove, and we talked about the existence of Rov in general and how we find it applied in different cases. The Gemara and Yuma telling us for Pekuach Nefesh purposes we don't follow Rov, but in other cases affecting Nefashos we do, apparently, that we execute somebody for hitting his father even though it's only known to us through Rov Yuvasach Rabal, and we execute people based on a majority vote in Bezdin, and we follow Rov in that case. The question is, so why don't we follow Rov also for Mamonis, as the Gemara and Sanhedrin already suggested the Kal V'chomer in that direction? So Rishonim asked that in many places. We only looked at one so far, the Tosfos and the third parak on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, where Tosfos says that it's different, that in Bezdin the Miyut is as if it doesn't exist, while when it comes to the dispute between two people, so the Miyut is still there, and the Miyut and the Chazaka make the Machzik win. And we discussed what that means, that it sounds like he's saying that there's 2 points versus 1 point, but thinking about it, maybe it's really 1 point, because if we're assuming that a chazaka means more than itself, chazaka implies something about reality, so then if the other guy had 100% rove, then we know that the chazaka doesn't reflect anything. But because it's not 100% rove, it's 80-20, let's say, so the 20 means it's possible that the machzik is right, and once it's possible, so then his chazaka is meaningful, and therefore his chazaka is able to stay. So then it's really the kasha is the other direction, the kasha we get why we follow the miyut and the chazaka there. The question is, why not with the bezdin? Why don't we say that the machzik can stick with the one dayan that he has. So that's the first part of Tosfos is saying that no, that in the case of Bez, then he's outvoted and negated, and therefore it's not a factor in the decision anymore. Again, many other approaches to this question are shown, or at least one major one. So, God willing, we will continue from there. Who wants a daven for us? Have a daven. Okay.
Don't forget to leave that tachlin.